This episode of iRescue Radio is brought to you by ProCPR.org. Online CPR training, when you want it, where you want it.
And welcome back to iRescueRadio.com. This is Roy.
I'm Jody.
I'm Dan.
And we're back in action, bringing you some of the latest of stories. And we've got a nice mix again today. It's kind of like a good salad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Big mix.
The big mix.
This is a chef salad. Today.
This is a chef salad.
And I think it's of darker greens than a traditional iceberg.
It's got a little bitter.
Okay.
It's got some bitter herbs in it, but then it has some nice creamy cheese in it, too.
Ooh. A little romaine.
Yeah.
Unpasteurized.
A little vinegar, and yet it's got some garlic.
Mm.
And then sprinkle a little bacon bits.
Okay.
All right. So anyways, we are into the first month of the year. And in this session, we're going to be talking about everything from coffee that's good for you to sleep that's even better for you. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about salmonella outbreaks and some interesting things. You think there's even a face transplant that we're going to talk about.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Groovy stuff.
All right. Sign me up.
Yeah. And then we're going to talk just briefly. We're going to conclude it with the top news stories of 2008 per CNN. And I think it's going to be fun. Okay. First thing I read, my wife tells me last night, we get the Wall Street Journal, and she said, did you read about the scrubs? And I said, what do you mean? She said, there's an article here talking about scrubs being a germy, deadly mess. So we read the article, and I'm freaked.
You ought to be. I remember when I was a nurse's aide, how many years ago that was. That was the one thing. I'd come home with my uniform on, pants and shirts after, you know, working with 20 patients with everything imaginable to getting on you.
Right. CNAs. We know what CNAs do.
Uh-huh. And so I'd get home, and this is when I was younger, and I was still living at home, actually.
Okay.
And my mom would say, you're going to change those clothes right now.
Yeah.
I never thought about it.
Well, your mom had a nursing home background.
She did. She was a nurse's aide for, I think, almost 15 years.
Sure. So she would have fallen into the old-fashioned methodology of infection control, which is wash, 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 contain, wash, right?
Bonfire.
I think we've gotten lazy.
We have.
Dan.
As we go through this, everyone out there in our audience, think about your local coffee shop and how many beautiful scrubs come walking through there for their latte.
Yeah.
Are they going on shift or are they coming off?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Never thought about it until I read this article.
That's why you go, right. I mean, what if they're third shift? So it doesn't matter what time of day it is, right? Well, here's the thing. It was talking about how people mainly working in hospitals, but I think nursing homes, extended care, anywhere.
Okay.
So even in the urgent care center, if we have somebody with a feces disaster, right? And I mean, to a point, we know we clean all that area up, but you just can't get it all in most cases without spraying the whole room down.
Mm-hmm.
A, we don't clean well enough. B, we don't leave the chlorine on it long enough, the bleach or the bacterial side, viral side, whatever it is, there's not enough kill time. We usually spray it on, wipe it down, and dry it off. And a lot of times these are wet to dry types of kill times. Well, anyways, to get into the meat of this, what it said was basically that, what you were saying, Dan. You see them everywhere, nurses, doctors, medical technicians, and scrubs and lab coats.
Right.
They shop in them. They take buses and trains in them. They go to restaurants in them and wear them home. What you can't see on these garments are the bacteria that could kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Dirty scrubs spread bacteria to patients in the hospitals and allow hospital superbugs to escape into public places such as restaurants. Some hospitals now prohibit wearing scrubs outside the building, partly in response to the rapid increase in an infection called C. diff.
Mm-hmm. What is that?
Nasty.
Really bad. It's virtually an untreatable bacterial infection that's orally ingested in most cases.
Right. Clostridium is the actual name that you hear it called quite often.
Spell that.
Yeah. And we can't get rid of it. Yeah. That's the problem right now. Yeah. And it causes colitis. It causes all kinds of bowel problems. And it's deadly. Mm-hmm. People tend to die from C. diff.
Well, and it was interesting as I read through this, said up until 20 years ago, nearly all hospitals laundered scrubs for their staff.
Yeah.
It's indicating that one hospital in St. Louis has gone back to that, and it's reduced infections after cesarean births by more than 50% mm-hmm. by giving all caregivers hospital laundered scrubs, mm-hmm. as well as requiring them to wear two layers of gloves.
Yeah. Well, it goes on to say, across the pond, a British study found that 1/3 of medical personnel did not launder their uniforms before coming to work.
That's scary. You know, that is scary. you think about staff. You know, staff infection.
You know why, though.
They get
used to it.
Sure, absolutely.
If I don't see blood, right. if I don't see obvious contamination, mm-hmm. what did I do?
Yeah, right.
I walked around right. the office. Right. I, you know, was in the hospital. Mm-hmm. They just don't understand.
What are they
understand.
Taking home?
They're yeah. taking tons of things home.
I mean, that's the problem. Yes. Well, yeah. working in the ambulance, we had that concern all the time.
Absolutely.
You know, my uniform, as soon as I got home, my uniform was off.
I had the no-hug rule.
Yeah.
I walked into the mudroom. Nobody hugged me.
Yep.
I took off all my stuff. The laundry was right there. I threw it right into... I took all my clasps and pins off and stuff. Threw it right into the laundry. Mm-hmm. And then I hugged my kids and my wife.
Yep. Yeah. Because it's amazing. You think of staff... Nosocomial infections is what they call in hospitals. Yep. And it's one of the number one killers.
Mm-hmm.
It is one of the number one killers of infection spread in the hospital from workers to patients.
Does the medical industry just essentially build up its own immunity to this stuff?
Mm.
Or are they spreading it to those that aren't in that environment all the time?
Well, no. I think you're getting into a really important part of this, and that's... the evolution of antibodies, right? And how certain people in different areas have resistance to certain things that we don't. You know, water, for instance. People in third world countries can drink waters that we could never sustain life in.
Correct.
They were born into that.
Right.
But C. diff is one of those things that right now, especially in the United States, nobody has an autoimmune that we know to it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing that is that it's everywhere. In hospitals, C. diff contaminates virtually every surface. Mm-hmm. It spreads when traces of an infected person's feces get in another person's mouth. Patients who touch objects in their room and then eat without washing their hands unknowingly swallow the germ.
Yep.
Many otherwise healthy patients who go into the hospital for elective surgery, such as a hip replacement, have contracted C. diff and died.
That's the scary part.
Yeah. And outside the hospital, C. diff is also difficult to control. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It isn't killed by laundry detergents or most cleaners. Researchers at Case Western Reserve and the Cleveland Veterans Administration Medical Center found that even after routine cleaning, 78% of the surfaces still had C. diff. Only scrubbing with bleach removed it. That's not the kind of cleaning restaurants are prepared to do after serving hospital workers. If you think about it, Dan, you just said it.
Ooh.
How many people have you seen wearing scrubs coming into the restaurant?
Yeah.
And they sit down.
It's all the rage because they're all color coordinated now. They got purple ones. They got flowery ones.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And you know, they've got to live in that environment. It's better than being so clinical, right?
Right.
But now it's become a fashion
on
some level.
Yeah.
You know, to have the clogs.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. Matching clogs.
I don't think they feel like they're wearing scrubs that come in contact with patients.
It's their uniform for the day.
Yeah. But then they sit on the seat of the restaurant. They get possibly the remnants of C. diff, the germs, on the seats. Another person comes in, a child comes in, touches the seat, and then grabs their Qdoba. Are we advertising for Qdoba?
No, but we should.
We might as well.
So any managers of local Qdobas that would like to advertise on iRescueRadio.com,
there you go.
Call Dan.
Yeah, they might not have liked the association, though.
So bottom line from this from this article very much is
if wash you work your hands.
Yeah, the C. diff.
Change.
Yeah. Man.
Change.
He's
your,
full of it.
If you could only see me dance.
Listen, it's getting deep in here. So the bottom line is, change your uniform. If you're a healthcare worker, please change your uniforms. Realize that your uniforms have infections on them when you're working with patients on an active basis.
Yeah, and I think that's what you're talking about. You know, stethoscopes, same thing.
Washing
hands, don't reuse gloves, wash and chlorinate or disinfect your uniforms.
Absolutely.
People are dying. Mm. And you know, it's easy to become lackadaisical about this. Hard to believe, but it is.
Mm-hmm.
I've been there.
Yeah.
We have to tighten this up. We got to tighten it up. So,
yep.
Interesting story anyway.
Yeah, it is.
Well, one of our favorite subjects,
mm-hmm.
It should just be the three coffee beans, basically.
Right. Ooh. We could be the three beans.
I'll be dark roast.
I'll be medium.
I'll be light.
Coffee may protect against oral cancers.
Well, I should be well protected then.
Yeah, I won't have any problem. Gut rot, but I won't have oral cancer.
You know, there's just certain foods in your life, certain intakes that you just know are the right.
And coffee is one of
them. Coffee is just God's gift.
Mm. Ever since it made the little animals dance with glee in the Turkish mountains, we knew we were onto something good.
That Wall Street Journal.
No, that's a true story.
I'm not sure where that came from either.
No, that's how, supposedly, that's the myth.
Evolution of coffee.
That's the
Are
myth
you kidding
of how
me?
They found coffee.
Okay.
Did you get goat? A Nova or something?
No, I did the research. A goat herder was out in the bush.
Stop.
Its little goats were nibbling the little sweet red berries.
Okay.
And suddenly noticed that they perked up and were more jolly and alert.
Wow.
It's a true story. Look it up.
That tree in my house. Right.
I'll have to look it up.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm talking about.
Well, you know what I thought was interesting in this article, though? I thought it was interesting where it talked about those who drank one or more cups per day had half the risk of developing the cancers.
Yeah, they don't have any adrenal glands left, but, but they sure won't die of oral cancer.
That's a significant drop, though. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is. It is. You know what I was really surprised about? I'm sorry to say this. The consumption of coffee in Japan is relatively high.
Yeah.
Does that surprise you? I thought
I'm doing my best.
No, well, I mean, I thought that tea was primarily the choice drink.
I think it's more China.
I know that's a stereotype.
That's China more
than
Japan.
I thought it was sake.
Yeah.
Speaking of stereotypes.
Yeah. So interesting. So another good reason to have another cup.
That's right. So lower your risk of cancer.
To coffee.
There
you
go. To coffee.
Here we go.
All right.
One of the only times we'll be allowed to slurp coffee.
That's right.
On the iRescue Radio Show. Did you hear about the doctors making web calls in Hawaii?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It is cool. It's cool. I think it's cool because it supports what we do.
Exactly.
Right. That we're leveraging technology to bring training, in our case, to people in their bunny slippers.
Information.
When they want it, where they want it. In this case, it's not just information. These people are doing 10-minute follow-ups with their physicians or even doctor calls.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's where it gets a little dicey in this article, which we're going to be posting this on the iRescueRadio.com website. So if you want to read the full article, be sure to get there and click on it. And just a reminder, all of our articles are backed up. So we have the links. Our super duper Kaliscooper engineer, Paul Martin, is super good about making sure all the source links are there. So if anyone wants to, you know, hear the non-edited, non-chopped, cut, sliced,
skewed, bean version,
messed up version, they can get the real deal. But anyways, the New York Times was talking about this. And the service is for people who seek easier access to physicians because they're uninsured or do not want to wait for an appointment or spend time driving to a clinic, said Roy Schoenberg, co-founder and chief executive of American Well Systems, which is based in Boston. Now, the patients use the service by logging onto the participating health plan's websites, and the doctors hold 10-minute appointments, which can be extended for a fee and can file prescriptions and view patients' medical histories through the system. American Well is working with Health Vault, which is a Microsoft electronic medical record service, and Active Health Management, a subsidiary of Aetna, which scans patients' medical histories for gaps in their previous care and alerts doctors during their American Well appointment. So they're not only are they speeding things up and creating more efficiency and cutting down on drive time, and think about shut-ins. Now, you could argue, are shut-ins going to actually have computers? But as the generations keep moving forward, the information technology arena obviously is going to become more and more fluent as well.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But 700,000 members, and they pay about $10 to use the service.
Well, that's reasonable.
Yeah, it
is.
Very
reasonable.
Yeah. Now, maybe that goes up, right? Maybe that's just for the 10 minutes. And I don't know, you know, if I'm sick, my appointment usually would go more than 10 minutes.
Yeah, it depends on what you... If you just need a prescription refill, though, because you're coming in... You need more pain meds because it's something you have a regular thing that you need to do. But sure. the doctor obviously has to see you.
Yeah.
He can't just write a script for pain meds. He's not supposed to anyhow. $10 to do that?
Yeah.
Why? It's a no-brainer.
Yeah, they do it through a webcam as well. Yeah. I think bilateral.
It's great.
So I think what happens here too is, Dan, your wife just cut her hand.
Yeah.
Okay, so she got stitches.
Right.
And the doctor is going to want to probably have a follow-up in a couple few days to make sure there's no infection.
Right.
And that the stitches are doing fine or whatever. Right. Well, what if she calls in and she shows him her hand or her, whatever the doctor is, and shows the hand to them?
Right.
I mean, with the right camera, which we use, we do skill evaluator training with a camera.
Sure.
I mean, we can easily see carotid pulse checks and chest compression placement and things like that.
High quality.
The only thing they said was a little dicey, and I would agree with this, is trying to differentiate, say, strep throat versus just a raw throat from a virus.
Correct. Exactly. In the home, if you know, I get what you're saying. I would say yes. If you're in a house and someone's using their own webcam and saying, "Do I have a strep throat?" That'd be a little tough too. But in a doctor or in a doctor's office, you're in a remote location, and your doctor's and you're in Timbuktu, and your doctor's over here in the city.
Sure.
Well, instead of you having to drive into the city, you could be in Timbuktu with a proper camera, and you could see everything clear as a bell. They have those kind of cameras.
I can just see cell phone videos. Pointing it in your mouth, at your strep throat, going, "Doc, what do you think?"
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But absolutely.
Now, one thing I picked up on this that has been something we have absolutely measured in our business is this has a tremendous appeal in the rural community.
Absolutely.
Where access to these types of services are difficult at best.
Yes.
And this technology is making it readily available and really, if you want to call it, socializing it.
Sure.
You're getting what I would get in Boston, Massachusetts.
Right.
In Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Sure.
Wherever you're at, in a bigger city
where
services are right around the corner. I mean, on this street alone, we got how many med centers?
Three or four.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And you go up to my little town, it's 25, 30 minute minimum to the
closest
one.
Absolutely. Sure.
So this is leveling that playing field.
Yes,
it is. It's giving access, and I think that's a critical component of this, what I drew from this article, is it's socializing it in the best sense.
Right. Yeah. Well, and think about, it's hard to get to experts.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
It's hard to get to an expert. There's travel time. There's drive time. There's always the crunch on how many patients do I see.
Right.
Well, many times it's logistics. How many people fit in my waiting room?
Yeah.
How many people can I get in? You know, out.
Yes.
Now we get bad weather, so they have to cancel and reschedule.
Correct.
I have had virtual office appointments with my doctor already.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's almost all telephonic.
Yeah. Correct.
Okay. But
and you got to ask a nurse. Things like that.
Yeah. Well, but I think with the webcam, that's
that's flipping it.
Yeah.
Yes, I think too the doctor is now looking at a database spreadsheet. While he's looking at the webcam.
Right, they're using electronic medical records.
You bet. Right. That's always been my argument.
Well, one thing that's really cool is last time I had a stress test here a couple of years ago, and everything was on the computer. So the doctor in the room, he's looking at everything on the computer in the files. If he wants a consult, he doesn't have to wait 2 weeks to consult a specialist someplace. He just simply says, "Will you please look at this?" The other doctor, and who knows where this doctor is.
Sure.
Can look at that same exact thing, do a consult in a matter of a few minutes as opposed to a few weeks.
Exactly.
It's amazing.
Yeah. We're going to see some really cool stuff. Yeah. I mean, this is the way to do it. You leverage technology. ProCPR Pro Trainings is doing that. We get a little bit of lashback because people can't get it around, their heads wrapped around
it. It's the new delivery system.
It is.
It's not the only delivery system.
No, and just
but it's becoming extremely legitimized.
Yes.
When you can get your master's and doctorate online.
Right. And there's things that you can do 100% online, and then there are things that you have to blend.
Correct.
And this would be the same thing.
That's right.
If you have a laceration and you're wondering, do I need to come in for stitches, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be great to just show the doc over a webcam and have him say, yeah, you're going to have to come in.
Yeah.
And then you go in and get the stitches. Instead of like what I've had, where you go in, you wait 2 hours in the waiting room, and then they say, you probably really didn't need stitches.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's good stuff.
Good stuff on the horizon.
Who likes to sleep?
Oh, I love to sleep.
When you sleep.
When I can.
Well, the new study says that sleeping an extra hour could literally cut down on heart problems.
I like that kind of study.
Just
you're one? Talking about calcium deposits in the arteries specifically. Is there something the heart does in that additional hour? Does it purge? Does it hit a cycle like my laundry machine at the end that says, okay, this is the rinse cycle?
Start to spin.
Well, they said that unlike other studies looking at the risks of getting too little sleep, which use people's own estimates of their sleep patterns, Lauderdale's team set out to measure actual sleep patterns. They fitted 495 people aged 35 to 47 with sophisticated wristbands that tracked subtle body movements. Information from these recorders was fed into a computer program that was able to detect actual sleep patterns. The team used special computed tomography, or CT scans, to assess the buildup of calcium inside heart arteries, performing one scan at the start of the study and one 5 years later. After accounting for other differences such as age, gender, and race, education, smoking, and risk for sleep apnea, the team found that sleep during duration appeared to play a significant role in the development of coronary artery calcification.
Yeah.
About 12% of the people in the study developed artery calcification during the 5 year study period. Among those who had slept less than 5 hours a night, 27% had developed artery calcification.
That's pretty amazing. I don't think there's a dump that takes place where all of a sudden the heart says, well, here we go, all the calcium, boom. I think it's an overall effect of just the stress that's on your body, the stress that's on your arteries, the stress in your heart, the amount of chemicals that are released from the whole process of sleep. I think there's a myriad of things to it. It's not just like one specific event that occurs.
Yeah, and Lauderdale, the person who was in this, stated, it's something of a mystery, to answer your question, Dan.
Yeah.
They're not really exactly sure why it decreases the calcification of the arteries. So I'm sure that now that they see that it does, there are going to be some really smart people out there, experts in the industry, that are going to try to find out what that is.
This is interesting. In my previous life, I had worked with a number of hospitals, and all of a sudden saw a proliferation of sleep centers coming around. Now, this was probably late 90s. Early 2000s, it just struck me in looking over this article that I gotta believe the data we're getting on the science of sleep is proliferating greatly.
Sure.
The data we're collecting in the last 6, 7, 8 years, it's telling us stuff. We're not just measuring whether Jody's got sleep apnea.
Right.
They're doing other things with it. It's data.
And, you know what kind filter. Of, here's what kind of bugs me, and it might bug other people too, is as I woke up this morning at 3:22 a.m. after going to bed at 11:30 because I watched Star Wars, A New Hope, I really wanted to go to bed. I really did.
But you were too excited about the movie.
Well, we wanted a little date night. And so anyways, at 11:30, I wake up at 3:30. Why? Because my 2.5-year-old son decided to wake up at 3:30 in the morning and thump and bump upstairs, which usually means I'm up and I'm getting into trouble, right? So I don't have an option. I can't just roll over and say, "Oh, he'll be fine." He can get hurt.
Yeah.
Right. So my point is I had to get up. I had to wake up. I had to get out of my bed. I had to go all the way upstairs. Process of 5 minutes. He had to go potty. Right. So I disturbed my sleep pattern. It wasn't like a subtle wake up and then roll over and go back to sleep.
Right. Right.
I was up. Well, then I only have 2 hours and it's 5 o'clock. I wake up at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah.
So I'm in a phase of my life right now where sleeping more than 7 hours a night is not an option.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's not an option. There's too much stuff to do. There's too many things that come in, and I don't know how to fix it. So I guess the moral of the story here is don't rely on any one thing to save your life, right? So that's why at 5:30, 6 o'clock, I get on the bike, or I get on the treadmill, or I lift weights. Try to eat, right?
Yeah, it's like you said, it's not a one-thing solution. I think a lot of what this article is getting to, it's not necessarily the sleep pattern per se. Well, no, I guess it is talking about pattern, but it's talking about the stress hormones,
Cause another disruptive pattern.
It was a little less sleeping last night, so apparently I'm having a stroke. when you think about this article, a lot of it has to do with people just don't have a clue about their sleep. They think, sleep doesn't matter. I think that's what this article is trying to point out.
Right.
It's saying, you know what, it does matter. Yeah. Yeah, there's going to be nights where you're not – when you have children, there's going to be nights where you just don't sleep. Like, you know, two-year-olds, especially have four-year-olds that like to wake you up in the middle of the night. That's just not – it's just going to happen.
What do you do?
But right, you deal with it. But
you don't stay up and watch Star Wars until 11:30.
It can be kind of fun once in a while. But but the idea is the overall sleep that you get
is
very valuable.
It's valuable.
It's those occasional interruptions at night are going
to
happen.
Well, I'm encouraging everyone here at the office to take a nap for a half an hour if they have to.
Oh. Only half an hour? I thought you said
The study said a half an hour to 45 minutes. No more than 45 minutes.
Why? I thought you said 3 hours.
No. Then Jody will be drooling and comatose.
You know it's trouble when he brings his sleep apnea machine
in. I know. We know it's going to be quite a nap.
Well, it didn't work at night. We'll see if we can catch up today.
He's going down in the capsule.
Well, honey, I even get paid for it.
How about them apples?
How about them apples?
All right. Moving right along. I told you it happened. I've told other people that would happen.
Mm-hmm.
People don't believe in vaccines. We got all kinds of scares and freaking out that it causes autism in children. I'm telling you, we are a spoiled generation. We are spoiled because if it's out of sight, it's out of mind, right?
Yeah.
If let's try to think of one here. Bird flu. Bird flu.
Blue bird flu?
It was primarily in other countries.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
In heavy fowl population.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Did you worry much about getting bird flu?
No.
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 But if someone would have had bird flu and potentially come over, there was suspect that you might be able to catch it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. People in my generation and younger have not, for the most part, had to deal with polio,
correct,
measles,
yep,
mumps, rubella,
whooping
cough, things that are, or were, I should say, virtually extinct.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
They weren't extinct, and that's the problem. Right. We talk about that in bloodborne pathogens and infection control all the time. This stuff doesn't have to live in a human body. It lives in the earth. It lives in water. It lives in the air. It lives on plants. It's in other animals. I mean, all it has to do is mutate, and all of a sudden, something that's bovine can become human.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, I mean, it's, you know, this stuff doesn't go away. These microbes are living beings, and they mutate, and they will do whatever they need to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we really had a push in the U.S. from about the 50s, 60s, 70s,
yes,
up through the turn of the century, vaccinate from birth through grade school,
correct,
and eliminate the possibility of some of these childhood diseases that were preventable.
Right.
And then, I think probably 20 years ago or less, a big homeopathic movement began, and for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay? Because there is a lot of shystering going on in the medical industry. Look at antibiotics are getting forced down the throats of every person with a potential earache.
Right.
And now we're finding out that was viral. And now we have antibiotic resistant strains of bacteria.
Yep.
You know, so I'm not beating up homeopathy. In fact, I promote.
You participate in
blended homeopathy.
Yeah.
Because I think that it's a good marriage. Prevention, reaction, rehabilitation. Okay, it all comes together.
Yeah, right.
All right. But some of this stuff, I'm sorry, it's a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
We had measles problems. My brother had measles as a child and had serious complications from it.
Yep.
I didn't because I got the measles vaccine.
Right.
Right? Well, we're about 1, 2, 3 generations now, almost.
Correct.
Of people that are not vaccinating because they have not had to worry about it, or they believe that it's wrong to vaccinate, or they believe that it's unhealthy to vaccinate. And look at this article.
Yeah, amazing.
And measles outbreak. We had whooping cough in the plain states and the eastern central area of the United States, south of our state, last year or the year before. All these different childhood diseases are rearing their ugly head again.
Yep.
And the problem that I see here, guys, is that the vaccines have been, in my understanding, minimized to the point where it's the weakest dose you can get, for the most part, mm-hmm. possible.
Right.
And so it does not protect people well from all-out attacks.
Hmm.
In other words, we all get the polio vaccine, right?
Right.
Most of us did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I got the shot when I got it. Because it changed from the shot to
from the oral to the shot. Oral. It was the sugar cube, right. And then it went to the shot.
Then it went back to oral. I mean, they keep
changing. Well, and part of the reason is, and the reason that they had to offer the live virus before, and nobody gets a live virus polio anymore.
Oh, okay.
No. So what researchers and scientists have said is that the amount of antibody protection you get now is at a level that would help protect from passerbys. But if there was a serious outbreak of that disease, it probably would not prevent infection.
And that's a scary thought, too.
It is.
You know, and you think about vaccinations. I think I know several families that I've worked with over the years that have chosen and opted not to do vaccinations. I don't like it, but I understand the ramifications working in the medical field.
Yes.
Because you talk to anybody in their 60s and 70s,
mm-hmm.
and you it was common for babies to die.
Yep.
It was common for babies to die from certain diseases,
yes.
and things. You look at the death statistics, go back 70, 80 years, look at the statistics from the birth and the births and the kids that lived,
yes.
to today, the people that live. It's yes. amazing, the difference. Amazing.
It is.
And
it is.
A lot of it has to do with vaccinations and a lot of these curable diseases.
Okay,
it,
but
it really is.
From the layperson's perspective,
mm-hmm.
These may be old wives' tales, but truly concerns about what the downside of vaccines are,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
including potentially autism.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't have all the information and I'm only getting one side of the story when I go into my doctor's visit, because oftentimes I think all of us have been subject to a physician who may not have given us both sides, the pros and cons of the vaccination process.
Right. Right.
And so there are legitimate concerns by parents that sure. are really thinking through
sure.
the health care of their children
mm-hmm.
and don't have all the information. Potentially coupled, and this may be kind of an oxymoron, but coupled with WebMD
yep.
and mm-hmm. access to medical information in blogs and parents mm-hmm. sharing with other parents and the rise of the homeopathy industry,
yep.
And parents trying to feed their children better and do other things,
mm-hmm.
and so they may not see it from the perspective of, well, yeah, I'm not vaccinating my child, but they're eating better, they're more active, we're doing other things to counter that previous generations may not have. So those mm-hmm. are just some lay approaches to it without all the medical background.
I can appreciate that. I also think that the technology that we have now, we would have never been able to break out iRescue Radio in the past. No one would have syndicated us. We didn't have a background necessarily. This is a venture. We weren't sure if people wanted to hear about, the softer, funnier side of medical stuff in the news. It's allowed us this level of self-proclaimed expertise. I'm going to pick on us. Blogs do that too.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can post a blog and spread it virally.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And when they sound convincing, suddenly they're the expert.
Mm-hmm.
You bet.
And if you say it enough, people begin to believe it, mm-hmm. especially if they don't have to put their kids through vaccines, mm-hmm. especially if they don't have to worry about their kid having autism,
right.
especially if they don't have to worry about the side effects.
Right.
But what's not being told to these enthusiasts of naturopathy is before vaccines, we were having problems. And what's not being said on the flip side of that is, look at this article.
Mm-hmm.
There are sections of Europe now, because of religion, because of what was it saying? It's not only religion, but it's also just their culture.
Mm-hmm.
There are pockets within Europe that decided not to vaccinate their kids.
Right.
Yeah. 6,000 infections occurred in 2008 And what's happening is that Europe is now, they're having these outbreaks of measles. They needed to have 95% coverage of vaccination to eradicate the measles threat. Mm-hmm. And what they're saying is, hey, Europe, or at least people in Europe that are not vaccinating and getting this, if you travel, think of the ramifications of traveling to a country that doesn't have vaccination available. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You could literally do what we did. Mm-hmm. What I say we, I say some of the founding fathers, what we brought to some of the tribes of the, of the American Indian people over. They did not have the antibodies for the diseases we brought.
Correct.
And we wiped out whole tribes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the same thing could happen here. And so that's where I get a little feverish about this, is I can respect a person's right to decide what's, and we're all trying to do that. We're all trying to figure out what's the best thing to do for our kids,
correct,
health-wise, spiritually, emotionally, physically, right, you name it, right? Educationally.
Right.
But what if my decision affects your kids because you bring your kids over to play with mine?
I understand that. But what I'm suggesting is, I don't think the patient is getting... To say that there's no negatives from vaccination is disingenuous.
Sure.
And I'm not saying that's what you're saying. But if there is a link to autism or to a bad golf swing for all that.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes. However, some of this stuff, that's the problem. Mm-hmm. That's the problem, Dan, because there aren't any links to autism. There's not been one proven case where...
So that's autism.
Okay.
But what about other... You're saying there's no negative impacts from vaccination.
No. That's not what I said. Yeah. That's not what I said.
The pros outweigh the cons. Yeah.
Vaccinations have always had the precipice that the risks were far less than the benefits. And when my father-in-law lost friends in school to polio over the summertime by swimming in public pools, and the polio vaccine finally came out, and they said, hey, we do have a small percentage. We have a X percentage of kids who take the live vaccine that get polio from the vaccine, but it's this percentage. And then they said, and the percentage of kids that go out into the public with this outbreak of polio, they contract it at this percentage. Parents then said, is it going to be a 2% chance of getting it or a 70% chance of getting it?
Right. Big difference.
Right? And that's all I'm saying is that instead of only reading, and it's the same for me, as a pro-vaccine guy, if I only read the things that support my beliefs, I'm really not intelligent. I'm really not fair to the cause. I have to read the pros and cons of both sides of the story, right? And then remember, it's like I talked about yesterday, there's always three sides to every story, yours, mine, and the truth,
right?
And the problem is that with the information age, we tend to get roped into self-published, well-wrote, enthusiastic blogs, articles, and they speak to what I want to hear. It supports my stance. Mm-hmm. And we do that with the radio station.
No question.
We do that with blogs. We do that with websites. And what I'm saying is, why not go to the clinic in Minnesota that's so good about research? Why don't we go to the Oxford Medical Research? You know, see what I'm saying?
Right.
Go to the raw, double-blind study tests. Mm-hmm. Go to JAMA. Go to some of those. Why? Because it's not interesting to the layperson. It's not written.
Not understandable.
It's hard to understand, but you can.
Here's a good example of that. And this is where one of the big things that got spread over the internet it went everywhere for a while here about the vaccines. Everyone claimed that vaccines were made from aborted babies. That's what their claim was. Well, what the raw data was about was it was bovine fetuses. It wasn't babies that were being aborted to make the vaccine. It was actually from bovine.
It spread like wildfire.
That's the problem.
I know.
That's the problem. We talk about the internet technology with it.
And I'm passionate about this because I'm passionate empathetically. Because I'm serious, guys. I don't want to give my kids a shot that's going to make them sick.
Absolutely. You know, well, papillomavirus is a good case point.
Yes.
I don't. No. This is a government thing, though, because, see, papillomavirus, it's based on sexual activity.
Yes.
That's what the problem is. Correct. And so I don't want my daughter having to take this vaccine because she's going to be sexually active in high school. That's baloney.
Now, people would say you're naive.
I'm not.
No, I agree with you.
My daughter's not an animal.
I agree. But I'm just saying on the other side of that, that's what the counter of that would be is,
right.
Oh, naivety. Right. You're going to withhold this, and now your child's going to make a mistake, right? And then she's, and I'm playing devil's advocate.
Oh, I know that.
But I'm just saying that's the other side of the story. And so you pin a good point here because the papillomavirus vaccine was pushed madly.
Huge. They were going to force every sixth grader to get it.
Which we know better.
Yeah.
I mean, that's civil liberties. You can't, there's some protection against people that don't want to vaccine their kids, period, about holding them back from school. There's a lot of posturing that goes
where,
on.
Where it could impact, I mean, my daughter entered college this year, and she could not attend without having X number of vaccines.
Correct. Right. And the bummer is she's getting them as an adult now.
What if in 2 years it turns into the papillomavirus?
Right.
Is added to the list.
I guess we'll start looking for private colleges. Well, that's the thing. And I think that there are some interest groups that are going to have a real heyday with that kind of discrimination against some of these non-proven medications.
Right.
And that's the good part is that, like the papillomavirus, with the information age, when those side effects, those ill side effects, and I think even a death possibly came out of this, when that broke, that information spread like wildfire, and suddenly the big push to have everybody papillomavirus vaccinated went right down the tubes.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot different than measles.
Yeah.
Measles is contracted airborne.
I mean, right.
So we're not talking apples and oranges here.
No.
And that's the difference between vaccines that that stop major outbreaks such as polio, measles,
versus
rubella,
voluntary activity.
Versus voluntary activity.
You made
that's
a decision.
The difference.
Correct.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to play the devil's advocate again. Others would say, what about rape?
Right.
Right?
Right.
Okay. That's the other side of the story, and that's why there's going to be an argument over this until the end of time.
Right.
But what really, I'm going to encourage is get to the facts. Mm-hmm. Get to the double-blind studies and get several sources.
Right.
Get several sources. It's not fun, but it's not fun finding out that you vaccinated your child and they got the disease because of the vaccination. It's not fun to think that they got a side effect, like, even though this isn't proven, autism as a secondary effect of getting this overwhelming vaccination that overloaded their system as a young child.
Right.
We've danced all around this issue. I guess the whole thing is that communicable diseases that others don't have a choice. You come into a room, you cough, sneeze, and others are going to get it.
Right.
One has to ask the question, what is our responsibility?
To the greater society.
And to stop only reading the things we want to read that get us off the hook. I didn't want to vaccinate Michael, our youngest son.
Yeah.
But I did it because the research was old enough and strong enough to show that the benefits outweighed the risks.
Correct.
It's a hard one.
Yeah.
Well, to summarize this up, the top health stories that were talked about in CNN was stem cell advances. Most of those, all of those, are umbilical cord and adult stem cells, and they're making great.
And from organs, not
and
just
from
that.
Organs. Mm-hmm. We did a story on that, right, where stem cells were basically used to create a new trachea for a trachea transplant. There was another story that came out about a face transplant.
Dan, how about the next one? It says autism. Debate over the causes of autism continued to rage after a court decided to compensate a family whose daughter developed the disorder after receiving childhood vaccinations.
I know, but that's court. That's subjective court again, right? That's not double-blind study. That's a subjective judge. That's a judge that is supposed to be objective. You know, I mean, that's admitting things without having all the facts. That was not good, judicious practice, in my opinion. Anyways, the other thing was
food safety. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the big thing on salmonella and all these outbreaks is you just got to be careful with raw food. And guys, sushi is on the top of my list. I love sushi.
Chinese today?
I hope so.
Sushi, well, see,
you're all invited.
Sushi's a whole different fish.
It's
kettle of fish.
That kind of fish is immune to those kinds of salmonellas.
That's right.
Asian fish.
I'll just read a report that backs it. That's no right. one's ever gotten hey, sick from
I'm gonna wasabi start, kills it.
I'm gonna start. Right. That's right. I'm gonna start a blog. Start a blog. Yep. Sushi safe.
Sushi safe. What a fun day. Heated.
In the throes of cold winter.
I told you it was going to be a salad.
Yep,
it was going to have spice mixture.
All right.
Well, that wraps up another one. Another one from the guttural bowels of iRescueRadio.com.
That scares me.
That scares me too.
Well, we talked so much about bowels.
Guttery bowels, yeah. C.
I think the thing we need to be happy about is we sat in the correct order today.
We did.
Yeah.
So Dan is feeling better.
It just really threw me.
Yeah. All is right.
In the world.
Stars have aligned.
So from iRescueRadio.com studios, I'm Roy.
I'm Jody.
I'm Dan in the correct order.
And we'll be talking to you again next week when we'll cover more dicey, spicy stuff in the world of health and safety and rescue. Have a great day.
If you have anything you would like to contribute to iRescue Radio, you can contact us toll-free at 866-661-5701 or visit our website at iRescueRadio.com. The commentaries in this podcast may not reflect the views of iRescue Radio or any of its sponsors or subsidiaries. iRescue Radio will not be held liable for any damages resulting from the advice given in this podcast.